My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 30 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back on the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. So, there's really only one topic that I want to talk about today. And that is the fact that we are at a very important decision point in our country, in my opinion. We've had the opportunity to stand against this authoritarianism and to rebuff the tyranny multiple times, and we refuse to do so. Not everyone, of course. There have been pockets of resistance, especially in places like Texas and Florida, but it hasn't been enough. And now, we find ourselves facing a point of no return. And as always, I want to preface this with the statement that I am in no way endorsing fear. Okay? I am not trying to be a fearmonger. I do not want you to be afraid, or I have no intention of using this platform to try to make you afraid, because I'm not afraid. I'm angry and frustrated. I'm fed up and ready to fight. But I'm not afraid. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Of power and of love and of a sound mind. Those are the things that I want to focus on today as we talk about the disaster that is looming in our country and in many ways has already arrived. But I want to make sure that it's clear that worry and anxiety will not improve the situation. It will only make you miserable. Nothing we do should be motivated by fear. We should be prudent and wise, but not ridden by anxiety and worry. Righteous anger that is translated into action is what we need, not hand-wringing and pearl-clutching. I intend to do neither. But it is important to point out what is happening so that we are aware of it. And it's important to understand the implications so that we can prepare for what may come. So, last Thursday, the President of the United States, after previously saying that his administration would not do it, unilaterally issued edicts that all businesses with 100-plus employees and all healthcare facilities must carry vaccination requirements for their employees. And during his speech, he used language like, "We will protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated," and "Our patience is wearing thin." Clear threats to those who remain unvaccinated. It is difficult to believe that this is where we are. There is so much wrong with this. It's difficult to even know where to begin. There are massive logical problems and constitutional problems, along with clear moral and ethical problems, and very serious concerns about where we're heading as a country. And I said this on Twitter, but think about this. If a large enough percentage of the country is able to be convinced that unvaccinated people are truly a deadly threat to vaccinated people, then what will they be willing to tolerate? If these tyrannical mandates don't work to get people vaccinated, and they won't, then what comes next? Segregation? Internment? What? Because we are in a who blinks first situation right now, where the government is demanding that this segment of the population get vaccinated, and that segment of the population is essentially saying, "Go pound sand, Mr. President." If the government is so committed to this insane mission of protecting the vaccinated from the unvaccinated, then how far are they willing to go to do that? Where is the line? How far is too far? One might even ask, what is the final solution to the unvaccinated question? Oh, you're being hyperbolic, Leonidas. Am I? Many of you know I work as a speech-language pathologist in the hospital and skilled nursing settings. The nursing home I work at has said that they are posting the jobs of every unvaccinated employee, including mine, in anticipation of mandates. And here's the thing about that. We're already operating short-staffed, and about half of us are unvaccinated. Never mind that being vaccinated does not stop you from getting and spreading the virus. So they're marching us directly into a disaster. And you have to wonder if it's on purpose. And you remember what they said about healthcare workers last year. They called us heroes. On my desk, as we speak, I have a thermos that was given to me by the company that says #hero on it. The hypocrisy is incredible. And we're now considered disposable because we refuse to take this unnecessary treatment. And there have been many cases of people advocating for unvaccinated people losing their insurance and being denied health care at hospitals. There have been doctors, yes, actual doctors, announcing that they will not treat unvaccinated people. Where are the people who normally scream that health care is a human right? Where are the pro-choice advocates? It's nothing but silence. Whenever someone who opposes vaccine mandates passes away from COVID, the response for many people is glee. They celebrate the death and mock the person who died. Just monstrous. They seem to believe that if you do not agree with them, then you deserve to die. A landlord in Florida has announced that they will evict unvaccinated tenants. And the same progressives who were just losing their minds about the end of the eviction moratorium, who have exhibited outright disdain for landlords, now all of a sudden support both landlords and evictions. The people who proclaim that housing is a right, again, silent. And it goes on and on and on. There's something you need to understand about these kind of people. And I know I've said it before, but these people, the kind of people who embrace socialism and communism, that the kind of people who believe that you deserve to die if you disagree with them, these people have no principles. The principles they pretend to have are bastardized versions of your own principles that they use to try to manipulate you. They're similar to sociopaths who mimic empathy and emotional normalcy in order to fool and manipulate others. I shouldn't generalize with all, because there's surely plenty of fools who follow these ideologies without understanding what it is that they're doing, and they don't exactly fit that description. But I'm talking about the people who seek power above all else and the people who follow them out of fear or some other twisted motivation. Those are the people I'm asking about when I wonder how far they'll go. And we've already gone too far. The question is, I guess, how much further? Like I said, these people will advocate for universal healthcare and proclaim that healthcare is a human right, but then decide that you shouldn't receive healthcare if you have the wrong opinions. They'll denounce racism and embrace critical race theory, but then have no issue with using racialized language like Uncle Tom or Coon to attack black people they disagree with, or turn a blind eye to a white woman in a gorilla mask throwing an egg at Larry Elder. They'll scream, "My body, my choice," when it comes to killing children, but they'll demand that no such choice be given to those who refuse the vaccine. They will scream #MeToo and #BelieveAllWomen until someone in their camp, like Joe Biden or Keith Ellison, are accused. There is no consistency at all. They don't believe anything they say. They implore you to love your neighbor, and they'll quote out-of-context Bible verses at you while simultaneously dancing on the graves of people who they disagreed with and lobbying to have others lose their jobs, have their lives destroyed, have their kids taken away, or shut out of society completely. They do not believe what they say. They know you have morals and principles, and they will exploit them to try to get you to do what they want. There is an appropriate quote from the Dune series by Frank Herbert that goes, "When I am weaker than you, I ask you for freedom, because that is according to your principles. When I am stronger than you, I take away your freedom, because that is according to my principles." And that perfectly sums up what's happening. Am I being hyperbolic for wondering where this ends? We have a group of people who have significant power in our country, who believe wholeheartedly that their ends justify the means, the ends being more power and control for them. So where does it end? I'm not going to get vaccinated. My wife is not going to get vaccinated. My kids are absolutely not getting vaccinated. In my age group, I have something like a 0.05% chance of dying if I get infected. So I have zero incentive to get it. And the idea that I must get it to protect the vaccinated is equally asinine. What the heck does the vaccine do if it's not protecting you? They are constantly touting these stats about how the vaccine keeps you out of the hospital and it keeps you from dying. Great, then leave me alone. You have nothing to worry about. So what happens next? What happens when people like me refuse to get the vaccine despite the mandates? What is the next measure? I looked at the VAERS self-report system again. There's a website called openvaers.com, which does a great job at compiling the VAERS data to make it easily accessible. And, you know, that site says that VAERS is estimated to account for only 1% of vaccine injuries, according to something called the Lazarus Report. And the CDC is just brushing off these stats that are listed in VAERS. And it's just self-report, so it isn't confirmed. Well, okay, but that's a heck of a shift from how they classified COVID deaths, listing every single death as COVID just because they tested positive, even if they were asymptomatic and died from other causes. And remember, they admitted this. That's not me just making things up. They admitted that they were doing this. If someone died in a car accident and tested positive for COVID, it was listed as a COVID death. But now, if you get vaccinated and die within a week, oh, they don't have enough information and we shouldn't jump to conclusions. Give me a break. There has been no honesty about anything this entire time, and I'm so sick of it. But anyway, as of September 3rd, there have been 14,500 reported deaths, 58,000 hospitalizations, and over 18,000 permanent disabilities reported that appear to be associated with the vaccine. 6,400 heart attacks, around 5,400 cases of myocarditis and pericarditis. I mean, this is serious. Now again, it is true that these are self-reported, and some of them could just be coincidental. But over 14,000 deaths seems to be a bit more than a coincidence. And the very least that these journalists could do is look into some of this stuff and try to figure out what is going on. I mean, someone like me, who has a 0.05% chance of dying from COVID, looks at a database like this on top of the political circus surrounding the vaccines, and I have absolutely no desire to get anywhere near that vaccine. I don't need it. I don't want it. There is no reason to take any unnecessary risks. Now, I'm not anti-vaccine, okay? If you're at high risk, it may make sense for you to get it. I don't know. I'm not you. I don't know or pretend to know what is best for you. That is why liberty is such an important and powerful concept. Everyone should do what they think is best for themselves and decide what level of risk they are willing to tolerate. I feel like a broken record saying that, but that really is the bottom line. That has been my stance from the beginning, and it continues to be so. But look, someone needs to investigate why 14,000 people died after getting the vaccine, and why 18,000 people are now permanently disabled, and figure out what the heck is going on. That's all I'm saying. I mean, the whole thing has just been frustrating. Every single step of the way, we've been met with sanctimonious demands and angry vitriol if you don't bend the knee to those demands. Their manipulative tactics continue to be trust the science or trust the experts, and then any hesitancy or questioning is met with accusations of being anti-science or a conspiracy theorist or whatever. And then it turns out later that everything they said was wrong. I mean, my goodness, they're only just now studying the vaccine's effects on women's menstrual cycles. Just now. And like I said, the default position about the VAERS system is that it's self-report and unconfirmed, as if that's better. As if it's okay that all of these deaths and severe side effects are being reported and we should just ignore it because, hey, we don't actually know if they're being caused by the vaccine or not. Maybe you should, I don't know, find out. That seems like a pretty important thing to go take a look at. But people are so consumed by the politics of this that they will tolerate absolutely no blasphemy. I talked about the Church of Woke in one of my earlier episodes and how wokeness operates like an extremist religion with dogma and its high priests, its inquisitors, its punishment of heretics, its rituals, its taboo, original sin, etc., etc. The vaccine stuff is fitting right into that mold. They say it's about science, but it isn't. Science can be questioned. Science must be questioned. And when you can't question it, then you know you're dealing with something else. And that isn't to say that there aren't things that we know from science, but they have been tested over and over and over again across many, many years and have yielded consistent results. Gravity, for instance. And we can be confident that the science is correct. However, the science surrounding COVID and the vaccines has not had any consistency whatsoever. And it's foolish to pretend that it is somehow settled when we're still discovering things, even now as we speak. Like I said, people are treating this with religious instead of scientific fervor. People like Fauci are considered prophets who operate as the voice of God, small g, and cannot be questioned. And this is what's concerning. When I talk about what comes next if people refuse the mandates, it is because we are dealing with a group of people who will seemingly do anything for power, and a group of people who, because they are afraid or because they are psychologically susceptible to it, are treating vaccinations and masking and whatever else gets passed down from the high priests as some kind of religious rite. The book Ordinary Men by Christopher Browning continues to come to my mind. And I eventually decided to name this episode after it because of what's been going on in this country. If you're unfamiliar with the book, it details the experiences of a Nazi police battalion that was made up of just everyday, typical, middle-aged German citizens. Most of them were apolitical and were not radicals in any way. They were not military. They were conscripted into the police battalion. And this battalion of 450 men, ordinary, regular people from Hamburg, Germany, ended up killing 39,000 Jews, including women and children, and sent 44,000 more off to death camps because they were ordered to do it. I mean, that book is awful to read, but you need to read it. It gives insight into human nature and the sheer brutality that we are all capable of. And I want to make that point clear. We are all capable of this. This is vital to understand. Those people in that police battalion were like you and me. They weren't different. They weren't crazy. They weren't especially evil. Now, what they did was evil. Make no mistake about that. But they themselves we're as human as you are. What is terrifying to think about is how you would have reacted had you been in that police battalion. Of course, everyone says, oh, there's no way I would have done that. No way. You would be wrong. The truth is, you don't know. The likelihood that you would have resisted is very low. And we talk about the people who risk their lives to hide Jews and try to smuggle them out of the country during World War II. And everyone thinks that they would have been one of those people. But the truth is that very few would have. And I know it's hard to picture yourself murdering a family in cold blood because a commanding officer told you to, or because you just wanted to. But you have to understand that you are capable of doing that. You are. And those dark parts of our human nature must always be kept in check. Now, of course, some people are more susceptible to these dark forces than others. Hitler and Himmler were especially awful. But darkness and light reside in all of us. The tale of Jekyll and Hyde is not just a story, it is a commentary on humanity. These forces are always struggling within us, and it takes effort to keep that darkness at bay. As a Christian, I likely have a different perspective than an atheist or not agnostic on what it is that keeps that darkness at bay, as my focus is on God and the principles in the Bible that teach us specifically how to do that. And honestly, our whole society has been built on those same principles. And as Jordan Peterson says, you act as if you believe them, even if you say you don't necessarily believe in God. But that's a discussion for another time. The point here is that we are losing it as a society. Our Western traditions and embrace of the true meaning of liberalism are being thrown to the wayside, discarded in favor of something that looks more like the embodiment of Mao. We are trading light for darkness. Once you embrace moral infallibility and determine that you are incapable of making the same mistakes that have been made all throughout history, once you determine that the end goal justifies any means employed to achieve it, we are in a territory where you are capable of anything. And I mentioned Christianity. This goes for Christians too. We've seen churches like Westboro and the evil that they embody. We've seen the evils committed by the Catholic Church throughout the centuries in the name of God. Slavery itself was supported by many Christians who attempted to use the Bible to justify their sin. But it was also Christians who understood what the true meaning of the gospel was and understood their own infallibility and man's desires for evil, who fought against and ended slavery. It was the true embrace of those principles that were able to confront and eradicate the evil. Jesus said that no one is good but God. Even if you're not Christian, I think we can still agree that evil is the default for man, and that we must, like Dr. Jekyll, work to keep Hyde chained and controlled. So I am concerned because there is an arrogance, I think, that we are better or more enlightened than other countries and other people throughout history. That is a lie. The people believe it. And it's easy to believe it when you think your cause is righteous and that you yourself are incapable of moral infallibility. When you believe what you are doing is the right thing to do, and you convince yourself that those people over there are evil, who deserve to have evil things done to them. Shut them out of society, hurt them, make them suffer. We are in a bad place when people have already begun advocating for denying medical care to unvaccinated people, cheering for their deaths, because they've been convinced that being unvaccinated is so horrible that the only remedy is the unthinkable. If you find yourself wanting someone else to die because they disagree with you, I think we have much bigger problems than the issue at hand. And please realize I am talking about more than just COVID or vaccines. This extends well beyond that, and we see the same kind of thing around multiple issues. You have to understand what you are capable of, and you must ensure that you guard your heart against it. Read Ordinary Men and recognize that you are reading about yourself. This is not a partisan message. It doesn't matter your political affiliation or who you voted for. That's you. You are just as human as they were. I will quote Jordan Peterson again. Well, paraphrase, but he often says that it is not remarkable that there is war and chaos and destruction and brutality. We don't need to ask ourselves why those things occur, as they are the default for humanity. For human nature. We should be asking ourselves why there is peace, because that is the anomaly. There's an oft-quoted speech by Ronald Reagan where he says that we are always one generation away from losing our freedom. And I just want to read a little bit of it here because it encapsulates the same perspective that I'm trying to convey here. That we have lost our sense of perspective and gratitude for the blessing of freedom and foolishly believe that we're incapable of falling into that abyss that so many throughout history have fallen into. Anyway, he said, perhaps you and I have lived too long with this miracle to properly be appreciative. Freedom is a fragile thing, and it's never more than one generation away from extinction. It is not ours by way of inheritance. It must be fought for and defended constantly by each generation, for it comes only once to a people. And those in world history who have known freedom and then lost it have never known it again. Knowing this, it's hard to explain those among us who even today would question the people's capacity for self-government. I've often wondered if they will answer, those who subscribe to that philosophy. If no one among us is capable of governing himself, then who among us has the capacity to govern someone else? Using the temporary authority granted by the people, in increasing number lately at all levels of government, have sought control even of the means of production, as if they could do this without eventually controlling those who produce. And always they explain this as necessary to the people's welfare. The deterioration of every government begins with the decay of the principle upon which it was founded. Brilliant words, and of course, absolutely correct. That speech was given on January 5th, 1967, when Reagan became governor of California. It could have easily been written yesterday. And you think about how much further since we have traveled down the path toward communism, toward disdain for freedom, toward rejection of self-governance in the last 50 years. How have we not seen the writing on the wall yet? It isn't new. This march has been going on for a long time, and every day it seems we surrender a little bit more of our liberty. You often hear people say things like, well, it's just a little sacrifice. It's just temporary. You've tolerated other intrusions on liberty in the past in the name of safety. But these completely miss the point. We have already sacrificed too much and foolishly allowed our liberties to be stomped on and the Constitution to be circumvented. We have already traveled too far down that path. Past concessions do not justify present capitulation. If anything, they should motivate us to be even more cautious and resistant to infringement. People believe the precedent is set, and they will use those past concessions against you. They will say, well, you tolerated that, so why not this? The truth is that we never should have tolerated the earlier thing in the first place. We never should have given that inch. because the government will inevitably take the mile and more. I am not persuaded by the argument that points out that I have tolerated 999 cuts already in order to get me to tolerate just one more. I guess my bottom line is this. I am aware and think we all should be aware that the people who do or have done horrific things throughout the world and throughout history are not any different in any meaningful way than you and me. Other than what we do actively to keep that part of ourselves at bay. If you're unable to recognize the darkness in yourself, if you refuse to believe that you're capable of evil, then you are a fool and you open yourself up to allowing it to happen. It is vital to understand that people who commit evil acts do not believe themselves to be evil. They believe themselves to be righteous, morally justified. Do you think the Taliban or ISIS believe that they're evil? Or do they think that they're the good guys? That their actions are ordained by God? It is imperative that we understand this. Too often people believe that they wouldn't commit evil acts, but they're filtering that through the lens of what they consider to be an evil act. Do you understand what I'm saying? Of course, you're not going to do something that you consider to be evil. But what we all need to be aware of is that we're capable of doing evil in the name of righteousness. That we can believe we are morally justified and that our actions are noble, but commit evil against others nonetheless. And we must be aware of it. This, again, is why liberty is so important and why none of us should feel enlightened enough to control other people. And if we find ourselves wishing and hoping, or worse, actively causing the suffering of another human being because they disagree with our beliefs, we are lost. It makes us feel better to think that only monsters commit these acts. But the truth is that they weren't monsters. They were human beings. Evil psychopaths didn't murder 39,000 Jews in Police Battalion 101. They were ordinary men. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent.
If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. donorbox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research, challenge everything. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next week. God bless.